President Martin, you can go ahead and begin. 6 o'clock.
Okay. Good evening and welcome everyone to the regular meeting of the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency Board of Directors for April 16th, 2024. And with that, I'd like to call the meeting to order and move to item 2 of the Pledge of Allegiance. And I'd like to ask Director Bernstein if she would kindly lead us in this pledge.
To the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Director Brownstein. I am now for our announcements for tonight's meeting are as follows. This meeting is being conducted in person at the Pine Street Training Room. At the convenience of the public, members of the public may also participate virtually, logging into the Zoom meeting. Any member of the public may listen to the meeting or make comments to the board using the call-in number or Zoom webinar link. In the event there is a disruption of service which prevents the agency from broadcasting the meeting to members of the public using either the call-in option or internet-based service, this meeting will not be postponed or rescheduled, but will continue without remote participation. The remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting in person. Looking out, I don't see our regular members of the public present, so we will move on to procedures for tonight's meeting are as follows. I will introduce each agenda item staff will present. I will ask for public comment. Staff will ask for discussion. I will then ask for discussion and questions from board members. Please raise your hand. Once concluded, I will ask for a motion and a second. After any further discussion, the board secretary will call the roll call votes. All directors are present except for Director Cooper and for Representative Zahosky, who is on his way. Director Cooper is not on his way. He's on the other side of the world. Now we will continue the meeting with item 3, public comments. Members of the public may comment as to items within the subject matter jurisdiction of the agency that are not on the agenda at this time. We ask that members of the public wishing to comment on items that are listed on this agenda do so at the time each item is considered. Members of the public wishing to comment on items covered in closed session before they are considered by the board must request to make comment at the commencement of the meeting at 6 p.m. There are no members of the public in the boardroom. Are there any public comments on item 3, Madam Secretary?
There is not.
Very good. Move to item 4, approval of the agenda. Are there any changes to the April 16, 2024 board agenda from the board? There is none, so the agenda is approved, and we are moving forward to item 5, special procedures. Item 5.1, public hearing to consider adopting a mandatory recycled water use ordinance. I will now open the public hearing and pass to Assistant General Manager Steve Cole to introduce.
Thank you, President Martin, members of the board. Tonight we have an item before you to consider an ordinance for mandatory use of recycled water. This ordinance did work itself through the Water Resources Committee, and it was recommended to bring forward to the Board of Directors for consideration. So this is the next step in a process to consider the ordinance. It gives the opportunity for additional public input and as well as board member input as we work through it. So tonight we'll have a presentation from Mr. Matt Wickens that will walk us through kind of the reasoning behind the ordinance and what you're considering tonight. We did receive a couple members of public comment written, both written tonight. Those have been distributed to the board for your consideration. I'll just walk through kind of the main purpose of the ordinance need as it's presented. And I think the staff report did a pretty good job of explaining that. But as one of our grants are coming under consideration to the State Water Resources Control Board for the Phase 2C specifically project. That's a project that has been put out to bid, and we are reviewing those bids currently. So as part of that process moves forward, you basically get into the final grant stages with the different agencies that we've applied for. We are eligible for a $3.2 million grant from the State Water Resources Control Board. And as part of that process, they have guidelines, and one of those guidelines is financial assurance that you're going to perform as far as the connections and projections of use that you are estimated. So that's the ordinance, in large part, timing-wise, is being moved forward because of that grant. We probably have another 3 months or so that we can consider as far as timing of that, but it will need to be in place before the grant is actually funded and we're able to receive funds through that. So I just wanted to make that clear about the timing expectation of those things. I think we're still interested in working with the various stakeholders, including the ones that have submitted letters and. The letters that we received tonight were from one area of the community, so we continue to engage with them, and we'll continue to do so to try and get that project finalized. It's a different phase. It's more the previous phases that were constructed. It's not subject to this grant requirement currently. So with that, I think I'll go ahead and let Matt come up and he'll walk us through a presentation. And then we're happy to get the option and answer after that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cole, and thank you, members of the City Water Board of Directors. Pleasure to be here tonight. I'm Matt Dickens, Sustainability Manager here at SCV Water. Tonight I'll be providing a presentation for your benefits and those visiting us on the call tonight, Recycled Water Use Ordinance. Next slide, please. Tonight's presentation will cover the topics as demonstrated here on the slide, but those include an overview of the current planned extension recycled water use in the Santa Clita Valley. We'll also look at a review of the SCV Water Recycled Water Conversion Incentives, including rates and our Purple Prep program. We will provide a little more context on the state grants to expand recycled water use here in the SCV. Then we'll look at a review of the Recycled Water Use Ordinance, provide staff's recommendations, and then conclude with questions and answers. Next slide, please. So as part of our mission to provide water at affordable costs, high-quality water at affordable costs, SCV Water, certainly since its inception, but for some time here in the Valley, recycled water has been provided to customers here in the Santa Clita Valley, dating back to 2003. Currently, we have about 18 recycled water use customers in that legacy system where we serve about 450 acre feet per year. That would include landscape, dedicated irrigation metered landscapes from the sanitation plant on Magic Mountain up into the golf course and along that trunk. Did we move Chris on? Okay, sorry. There's an edit that got caught there. I apologize. So we provide 18 dedicated irrigation meter customers at 450 acre feet of water per year for many years, dating back to 2003. Currently, recycled water is provided at a discount of 80%. We have some new development projects in process, including a new job program, which is an innovative way to account for new recycled water use development, considering that a large portion of our available recycled water supplies are adjudicated for dependent habitat. So this creative methodology allows us to work with those new developments to put that recycled water into beneficial use. In addition to that, the use of recycled water for approved permitted purposes conserves our water. It conserves our drinking water supplies. To that extent, I think on average, we tend to say that a house uses about half an acre foot of water per year. So that's 900 homes of water usage there that currently are being supplied with recycled water. Although it's important to note that many new homes are using water at much more efficient levels, and so that number probably increases. Next slide, please. So this is a map of the current planned extension projects. You can see a map of the Santa Clara Valley. So we have phases 2A, 2B, 2C, and 2D. Currently, 2B and 2D, the distribution pipes for those projects have been constructed and are in the ground. The 2B is in the Vista Canyon area. That will get its water from the water factory, ultimately. And then we have extension for phase 2D, which builds off of the current system that goes to the golf course and extends that through the West Ranch, West Ridge HOA, and ends at West Ranch High School and Rancho Pico Middle School or Junior High School. Phase 2C, shown here, may be broken into different phases as it's in this map, but this map shows that Phase 2C would eventually branch off of the existing system on the old road and then head towards the College of the Canyons to Vista Valencia Golf Course and perhaps ending at Hart High School, though that may be phased out as well. And then Phase 2A is extending that system along, I believe that's, from the treatment plant to Newhall Ranch and then ending at Central Park. Next slide, please. So when we're looking at our current plan extension projects, phases 2B, 2C, and 2D, we can see how many customers and how much acre feet of water we're looking at converting potable drinking water to recycled water to make beneficial use of that recycled water. So we're looking at about 59 customers total. They're about estimated 640 acre feet per year, with phases 2B having 27 customer services and 160 acre feet, phase 2C, 13 customer services with 300 acre feet, very sizable project, and phase 2D, 19 customers with about 180 acre feet of water per year. So good project, good use of that recycled water supplies in the community. Next slide, please. So as part of our projects and our intent to extend recycled water use here in the Valley and put that recycled water to beneficial use, and i.e. conserve our potable drinking water supplies, we have partnered and applied for grants from the state of California, as it's also promoting the use of recycled water as a great resource, a growing resource that needs to be put to beneficial use in our state to help us with our secure our water future. So we had a proposition around $3 million grant for phase 2C reach number one for about $3 million. Again, the State Water Resource Control Board recently awarded SCB Water an additional $3.2 million in grants for the recycled water extension. Great work to our team, our grant administration team, and our staff putting that into action. The State Water Resources Control Board, though, has said as a contingency and requirement of accepting that grant, it's looking for a recycled water use ordinance to ensure that customers will uptake and take that recycled water once the distribution pipes have been constructed or are in plant. And then again, in addition to recycled water providing benefits or securing our water future, grants provide SCB Water customers financial and economic relief by reducing those capital cost outlays that the agency would have to fully finance, and also, again, conserving our potable water, adding to our stellar water conservation programs. Next slide, please. So when we look at the State Water Resource Control Board request for a required recycled water use ordinance, we look to current water code. And here we can see California Water Code clearly states that the use of domestic water for non-potable uses, that is cemeteries, golf courses, parks, highway, landscape areas, industrial and irrigation uses, is a waste or unreasonable use of water if recycled water is available. However, that source must be of adequate quality, it must be furnished at a reasonable cost, and it must not be detrimental to public health, i.e., again, meeting those quality standards. So it does provide some authorization and some other types of permittable uses on there, but in this case, we're dealing with dedicated irrigation meter customers. Next slide, please. So turning to our recycled water use ordinance and its elements, we can see that it'll provide authority administration for the agency to implement recycled water uptake and administrate recycled water uptake here in the Valley. It does outline the termination of recycled water use area mandatory use. So it gives the agency a process to say customers that are along these trunk lines that have the availability, that can meet the water at affordable, be provided affordable costs, and that water supply is available, those could be determined eligible for taking recycled water. And then, of course, it identifies impacted customers, those for mandatory conversion, those for customers that request. We have had customers call us and request, I'd like to take recycled water. The problem is there's not a pipeline that goes down every street in our community. It's a very elaborate and intense, capital-intensive process. Next slide, please. So other key components of the SCV Waters Recycled Water Use Ordinance includes considerations for new development and alterations. That's refurbishments for projects that are perhaps in the project area that may have not been eligible at one point in time, may become eligible and desire recycled water at a later date. It does provide customer grievance procedures and protocols. That is, customers that have been deemed to be in the mandatory use or be eligible for recycled water use may have legitimate concerns and grievances in which they want to appeal that decision, in which case the agency has a process to provide due process. And then we have violations for enforcement. In this case, the process is outlined, but essentially would end in potentially a termination of service if the customer was gone, you know, went through the due process procedures and protocols, but still was found to be able to convert to recycled water. So that's the extent of the enforcement. Next slide, please. So with that, staff recommendation is that the Water Resources and Watershed Committee recommends that the Board of Directors adopt the ordinance to provide the mandatory use of recycled water within the agency's service area. Next slide, please. With that, we'd be happy to answer any questions that the committee and
thank you, Matt, for your presentation. Before we entertain questions or comments from the board in this public hearing, we do have two public comments that were submitted in writing. They will be part of the written record of the meeting. I will not read them. They are lengthy, but suffice it to say they are both protesting the adoption of the ordinance, and both are suggesting that they would proceed with litigation if we were to do so tonight. Do we have any other public comments from Madam Secretary?
We do. Just one moment. You're not? No, we did just one. Mr. McNamara, I apologize if I was pronouncing your last name wrong, but you may begin your public comment.
Can you hear me?
Can.
Thank you so much. Good evening, board members and staff. My name is Rob Nakamura. I am the board president for the Western Valencia Master Homeowners Association. We are a community association of 1,040 homes and many more thousands of residents. I'm here to provide comments and input regarding your agenda item for the required use ordinance for recycled water. I want to be clear from the start that the Westridge community fully supports maximum conservation efforts and the implementation of sustainable resources. We absolutely desire to participate in recycled water conversion to the maximum degree possible. However, as at least partially described in our written communication from legal counsel, there are significant obstacles to our being able to proceed while observing our fiduciary responsibilities to the community. In reading your team's information about the necessity to implement the ordinance, it would appear, at least in part, that the part of the rationale is minimal interest or participation since the introduction of the Purple Prep program. While not speaking for other persons or associations in the community, I can tell you with absolute assurance that, at least from our perspective, there is a great interest to participate, which is hindered mostly by the approach and poor communication from your teams. We were approached and first made aware of the recycled water conversions a full 10 years into the program's initial discussion and plan. The communication and planning challenges persist to this day. Truth be told, these are not solely on the side of SCV Water, since there have been LA County staff involved in the process as well. But as the main drivers and administrators of the project, your team ultimately should take full responsibility for the delays and lack of participation. Perhaps it would be worth considering that the lack of participation is driven by your team's approach and planning. I can tell you with 100% assurance that had your communication been timely and effective, Westridge could have already been through the first phase of conversion to include the community park and pool and large LMD slope and turf area. Our last email communication with a very reasonable request to move forward with a Purple Prep agreement was sent on February 16th and still have not heard back as of today, other than it is still being reviewed. As I've communicated with your team, we are desirous as a community to convert as much area as possible, although there's no budget to do so. The community began its construction phase well over 20 years ago, and despite the fact the area schools and golfs were provided with infrastructure and support recycled water, our community was not. Your ordinance makes no mention or guarantee of funding to assist communities or individuals in situations like ours, and has serious legal flaws as outlined in our written protest. As recently as Friday, the United States Supreme Court ruled in favor unanimously for the plaintiff in a similar lawsuit. While the application of the Fifth Amendment argument was not identical, it does have parallels. Ultimately, the Supreme Court determined they will strike down regulations that seek to impose costs on users as an unconstitutional taking. The projected cost estimate for the very small portion so far our community exceeds $300,000. Additional costs beyond and future conversions will well go into the high seven figures. In closing, since I'm running out of time, if you do enact this ordinance as stated tonight, we will be seeking forward with the full board to pursue litigation against the agency, and it is absolutely not needed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nakamura, for your public comment. Are there any other public comments, Madam Secretary?
There is not.
Okay, we can then open it up for board questions, discussions.
Can I ask your question? I believe that was a statement of potential litigation. Should we discuss this in closed session? Did he not imply that there will be legal action if we proceed?
Directly threatened.
Yes, he did. However, I do think there's a public discussion about the ordinance, which we're welcome to have. But certainly, at a later point, would be authorized if we agendized it to discuss it in closed session, possibly the next meeting, if you wanted to have that.
It's appropriate to discuss in generality tonight, though, or should we reserve comments for closed session?
I think we can discuss it. I'm comfortable discussing. I mean, we're not going to discuss litigation strategy if they weren't to litigate, but certainly the rationale and our opinion as to why we think the ordinance is authorized by the law and not a taking. There's a very specific requirement which mapped out that it must be provided at reasonable cost. Part of determining reasonable cost would be any required cost of conversion as well.
Okay.
And we've got a Purple Prep program that provides a good deal of funding, as well as a rate for recycled water, which is lower than where potable water rate is. So
if we can,
I think we can have a discussion about
it. Okay, thank you.
Before we continue with questions and discussion, I just want to remind the board that this is the time for discussion and questions. Please, no motions at this time on this item, but we can bring up any questions. Dr. Collins.
So, yeah, these letters are I guess the authors are ill-informed. Maybe that's the way to put it. I've read Sheets. It is a very recent case. I read it in its entirety. The case essentially dealt with the question of whether or not a legislative body is the actions of the taking of a legislative body are due less scrutiny, if you will, than a regulatory taking. It really is not by any means a parallel to anything we're going to do. These folks haven't identified, in my view, what they say we are taking improperly. It certainly is the case that we have the authority to restrict the use of potable water to uses that would be inside the home. We can and have restricted the use of potable water to outside irrigation. And the courts and the Supreme Court are very clear that that restriction of, and that use is not a taking at all. The threat of litigation is really pretty silly. If they can spend their money on that, we will, depending on whether they go to the state court or federal court, they will lose. The 12B6 motion, motion to dismiss, or the demurrer if we're in California court, the threats of litigation are really not credible. So clearly, California encourages the use of recycled water. I applaud the agency where we have tried to help different entities with funding in order to hook up to our system. I'm sure that we will continue to try to do that to the extent that we reasonably can. And if these folks don't understand the law very well, I don't see that that is a reasonable reason for us to not move forward with this. So I would encourage the board to discount the threats of litigation and move forward with this because it is an important program. Thank you.
Dr. Brownstein.
Thank you so much for the presentation. I have a few questions about this. So first of all, I think my biggest concern is a public relation, is the fact that we have an issue here with a community that, I'm not mistaken, has had an issue with us beforehand with the sandblasting things and all that kind of stuff a few years ago. And so I'm wondering if that's playing into this, and I'm not sure why we haven't resolved, I'm not sure what the problem is here between them and us. And I'm and there's also a problem with some schools in the area. Has that been resolved? No. So I loved the purple cap idea because it was to encourage people. I have a hard time with forcing people to tear up something that already exists and demand that they replace it. So unless we're funding it, I have a hard time with that. So I'm not, so I guess the problem is that nobody's being claimed or clear exactly about what the problem is and why we haven't gotten to like a happy place. because they are our customers. We don't want to force it down their throat. Like, that's not the best way to get to a good relationship. And then beyond that, I was thinking that if we have to, we can make the resolution apply to public spaces and to businesses and not to private. I mean, I know the HOA is kind of like in between. It's not really a, but, you know, do something like that. And I think we also have to have a discussion just in general, if this is the right direction to be going to, instead of we're headed towards direct potable use. So is it smart to invest in all of this if we're going to be not needing it later on? So
just a point of clarification, Director Bronstein, and that is that the required the recycled water use ordinance, while it does have a mandatory component to it, there's those three cases about water quality, availability, and reasonableness. And so the Purple Prep program would not need to be abandoned with this ordinance. Rather, the ordinance implores us to continue to work with companies to figure out how to bridge those financial considerations. Just want to make sure that it's not a this or that, it's together.
But can anybody tell me what the problem is? Why are they, where are we not agreeing? Like, what, and if this is the same community, because the name rings a bell.
Director Armitage.
President Marcus, if you'd like to take a little spin on that.
Excuse me?
Would you like me to answer Director Brown?
Well, sure. Questions?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a dynamic, right? So I think we've been trying for quite some time now, and I'll say both parties have been trying. There has been start and stops through the process. It's taken much longer than I think either party would want. I think that the programs are new. Right. And so this is kind of the first generation of trying to get the program to work for both parties. And so that's challenging when you do that. I think trying to align the expectations is the biggest challenge that we're facing right now. I think in the letter that we received and kind of a recap of the process, you can see we are getting closer. So, you know, I tend to kind of read through and try and get to the substance of what the status is of where we're at. I think we are close. I think it's taken a long time. I'm hopeful that it's going to get over the finish line. The timing of this ordinance is putting pressure on that process that we're going through. I think what you heard Mr. Dickens say is that regardless of the ordinance, we're committed to getting through the process and having a result that is reasonable and fair. I don't think anybody is looking to force people to use recycled water, but we're in a position that we have programs to help people in taking on that responsibility.
So, I mean, I think part of the problem is that if this needs to be approved like now because of the negotiation, because of the grant, like why wasn't this brought to us 4 months ago so we could have this conversation 4 months ago, have these discussions? Because right now I feel like I'm kind of stuck in this place because honestly, I don't feel comfortable. By me approving this, it's me forcing our customers. That's what it boils down to, right? It's either I vote for this and I force them to do something that we're not there yet, or we could possibly lose funding. And it's like TikTok. It's like right now we have to make that decision.
Director Bronstein and the rest of the members of the board, we do not have to adopt this tonight.
Just 3 months. Right?
Because it sounds sure. Like people...
But that's the next item.
Okay.
Right. Director Armitage.
So first of all, thank you, Mr. Dickens, for your presentation and to your, you and your team for all the work that you do to help promote sustainability and conservation for our community. I want to say thank you to Mr. Nakamura for his public comment as well. It's always good to hear from the public. I want to start by saying that I fully agree that conservation and the reuse of water are highly important parts of the agency's portfolio, and I generally encourage strategies to maximize reuse of water. And I understand the intent of this proposed ordinance and the requirement of an ordinance that's needed for grant funding going forward on recycled water projects. And grant funding, as we all know, is highly important and very much appreciated when we are able to receive it to help keep costs and rates down for our customers. So very interested in this topic. I have been very interested in this topic. Tried to kind of keep my ear on the ground on this as this has been evolving for the last, I think, like 3 years. Does that sound right? So I listened to the discussion that was had at Water Resources and Watershed Committee on this topic to better understand history and context. And what I think has been missing up until today has been the discussion of how, I mean, definitely one, maybe a couple of parties who feel that they have not received the answers to all of their questions to get them to a place where they feel comfortable converting their irrigation systems to recycled water. So, you know, I feel like the infrastructure was installed with the assumption that the affected parties would voluntarily convert their systems. And after about 3 years of negotiation, you know, some obviously still don't feel like they've gotten the information they need to feel confident that the conversion will not leave them with issues to deal with on their own. And that tells me there's more work to do to help alleviate these concerns. So similarly to Director Bronstein, it does not feel right to me either right now to force a mandate, particularly with a community with which we have had trust issues. So, you know, my first thought before listening to the committee meeting was, well, why don't we just delay this, give ourselves more time to negotiate with the parties? But I understand we're under a time constraint. So, you know, I would like to suggest, and this is not yet a motion, but something to throw out for to think about. I'd like to suggest that we add some language to the ordinance that allows for a waiver or an exemption for customers in the phases where grant funds have already been fully expended. So one that we are not, they're not contingent, there's no contingencies on the grant funds for a mandate. So I believe 2D, phase 2D and 2B are not contingent upon grant funds. And continue working with these groups who still need more information. And hopefully we can come to middle ground. My sense is we can come to a middle ground. It's just going to take a little more work. And so I feel like if we can make this a prospective ordinance, kind of going forward and not forcing the people that we are trying to continue to negotiate with, I think that would be much better. I'd also like to ask that we have an opportunity to learn more on how we can leverage this all into a learning experience, because I know we're trying to bolster relationships with HOAs going forward. I think they're a really, really key stakeholder group in our community. I think starting off with this is not a good foot to go off on. And so if we can continue to use this as a learning experience, and I think we can, I think this can become a positive thing and turn this into kind of a model of how we can open up communication with our HOAs and use it to build on with other projects as well. I would like to explore that and have a conversation. I'm not sure what format that would be in, whether that would be one of our special study sessions or maybe started at Public Outreach and Legislation Committee and build from there perhaps. But I think that would be an important conversation for us to have. And then I'm also gonna piggyback on another thing that Director Bronstein had mentioned. I think we need to kind of think at a higher level very soon. I think we are at a crossroads that not just our agency, many other water agencies are at right now, where we should pause and have a discussion about kind of our recently expanded options or reuse strategies and think about what makes most sense for us in the long run going forward. So I'll leave it at that for now. Thank you.
Okay. Vice President Ozdowski.
Mr. Jenkins, Mr. Cole, so recycled water will be offered to our ratepayers at a reduced rate. Regarding Westridge, what sort of financial assistance was or is going to be provided for their conversion?
Thank you, Director Ozdowski. And unfortunately, I think the slide made us lost over it, but the Purple Prep program, which is the planning retrofit effectuating program, which was developed with collaboration with impacted customers in the phase 2B and 2D communities in 2019 and 2020, has two separate options. One is an option that's based off an incentive that is tied to how much water use how much water they use in year and acre feet. The other, based off of feedback from folks in the 2D community specifically, was a direct install where the agency would pick up the full cost of conversion, the administrative costs of procurement, the managed construction management costs, and then hand over the bill of sale to the end-use customer once it's been completed. So those are the two options we have. One is you can have your own landscape contractor do the work at your pace, at their pace, and get rebated and incentivized with a dollar amount that covers a significant portion of the costs, or have it fully funded by the agency. And I would just like to point out that that program, again, was launched as a pilot program in 2021 and has a significant amount of time and energy met with our HOA customers, our school customers, and all the impacted customers on the phases so, we're talking about tonight. Thanks.
I believe the next slide was about he's just saying what the problem is.
Specific for the West Ridge HOA. Their letter talks about cost of $300,000 for an initial phase. Some of it ballooning into the millions of dollars. Keeping with your understanding of the work that needs to be done for conversion.
Without getting into specifics, I would say that that is escalated figure. Specifically, depending on who does the work, but the millions is certainly elevated. The other amount, depending on whether that job is done by a public agency or by a private landscape contractor, kind of it does depend on who does the work and how much that costs that rolls out.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Collier has already addressed concerns with Sheets versus County of El Dorado. Mr. Burns, if you can take a look at the other letter, could you make a comment on two cases that were stated, Anaheim Gardens versus the United States and Penn Central Transportation Company versus City of New York, and how relevant they are to this particular item?
Yeah, sure. I think I would address it by saying that in my opinion, this is not a taking and wouldn't be a taking. It's authorized pursuant to law. And part of the provisions which Mr. Dickens outlined is that it has to provide it at a reasonable cost. So if we're going to force you and require you to spend millions and millions of dollars, that's all in the determination of what is reasonable. So I don't agree with the letter. And maybe if I could just provide a little background. So first of all, we're not deciding tonight, and it sounds like maybe we won't decide tonight regardless. The ordinance is not specific to any one customer. Any negotiation that would occur over what is reasonable in the cost of conversion, what needs to be converted versus what we were willing to fund would be open to discussion, as well as how much money might be saved over years of getting recycled water at a lower rate than you might at potable water. So that's for one. And then two, just the statutory framework. So in, as Mr. Dickens said, in Water Code 13550, it essentially says that use of potable water where recycled water is more appropriate use is a waste and unreasonable use of water. So that is, you know, means that we have the ability to regulate, state has the ability to regulate. We have a water conservation ordinance right now, which prohibits the use of water, potable water, on non-functional turf in some of these exact same types of locations, but after certain phases of drought. So it's not unprecedented, and it's certainly within our responsibility as a water agency as we're conserving and trying to figure out how to allocate resources. And then the other piece is that the recent legislation, which is AB 1572, actually prohibits the use of potable water on non-functional turf, and it specifically has deadlines. So that's different than requiring someone to convert. We're saying that you can't use potable water. The state has said that for common areas of homeowner associations after January 1, 2029. So to your point, Director Bronstein, of requiring and enforcing them, it's very likely that a lot of, and maybe there's a disagreement about what is the common area or not, but a lot of the turf that we're talking about, the areas we're talking about, we're going to be prohibited from using potable water. And obviously recycled water, I think, would be an alternative that would be desired at that point. So we're heading in the direction of much more sensitivity with regards to how we use our potable water as we get into this cycle which we're in of ups and downs and more droughts and whatnot. So I just wanted to provide that. But to your direct question, Director Rosahowski, I don't agree that we have a taking because we are required to make a reasonableness determination on cost. And then there could be some discussion on that. Nice to bring the show.
I just wanted to add, and I appreciate the comments, and I think, you know, our intent in coming here is not to create kind of a controversial run it through and impose it immediately kind of scenario. We are acting with some expeditiousness just because of the pending grant, but I think the granting authority understands we're trying to work through this process. A couple of things I'd say. Matt already indicated this isn't a replacement for the Purple Prep. It's really the backstop. If that program is not, despite all the resources that are available in the program, if we can't get to an agreement with the party, we would have that tool to potentially nudge. It's really up to the board as well. It does not fall to staff to impose those sanctions. We would have to come back to the board with sufficient information for the board to act on that you know, we've offered a reasonable cost and approach to converting, and we are at impasse. Obviously, we probably want to show that it was an impasse that really was an impasse. And the board could then choose to act, and it then gets referred to the regional board for a hearing under the statute. So that's an interesting aspect. We simply refer it up to the regional board for them to have a hearing on the issue and take an action. A couple of things we've discussed, you know, based on the public comment that came in on the reasonableness aspect not being clearly delineated, I think we do have the ability to make some adjustments in the language to reference our program, our assistance programs, and the differential water rate, and our intent to work to make it reasonable cost for customers who are converting. So that would be on balance in the ordinance as well. That's one reason why I'm not pushing for action. And I think we wanted to go ahead with the hearing, hear more comment, let the board discuss it. But there's no issue at all with us taking some of this input and trying to improve the ordinance and the clarity of it and bringing it back at a future meeting. I think that's great. I guess I'd say one other thing. The phase two project was completed. I went back and looked. I submitted the notice of completion of that project in December of 2020. So that pipeline has been available in the stream. And again, I think Mr. Nakamura is correct. There's some fault on both sides. I think at the very beginning, we probably didn't realize how difficult it was going to be to coax customers into converting. And then we pivoted to developing an assistance program, which was passed not long after coming to that realization. And then the process since then, you know, COVID, other intervening issues that we referenced, it has been on and off. There, you know, I have a lot of the communications that I asked for from Mr. Diggins. And there are some pretty big gaps in communication, not just on our side. Can we be responsive? I think what's on the table right now is promising. We're not as far apart as we once were. And so I would not want this action to spoil that opportunity. But at the same time, we do have an obligation to be responsive to the United States requests that we do something. And there are many work agencies that have mandatory use ordinance. In fact, we discussed this back in 2020. And the board felt it would be better to wait on that aspect and move forward with an incentive program instead. But at this point now, the state is asking us to put something in place.
Director Collin.
So, several thoughts. The first, I think legal counsel has explained the ordinance takes nothing from any homeowner or from any organization. It takes the ordinance doesn't turn off anybody's water. It doesn't prevent them from doing tomorrow what they're doing today. And we'd be a long way, even when we pass this tonight, from actually taking or shutting off their water. I'm not, you know, that might be a taking when we actually did it. I would suggest to the folks that are doing their saber rattling and threatening litigation that they might want to wait to file litigation if indeed, which I seriously doubt, if the ordinance is unconstitutional, it will remain unconstitutional, and they could file an action 10 years from now. And if it's unconstitutional now, it would be unconstitutional then, and they would be able to file that action. I'm not even sure that they would have standing. But, well, I guess they would have standing to challenge the constitutionality because they are ratepayers and subject to the ordinance. But anyways, they have not, it's not a takings question yet for them. And they would not have any individualized cause of action until we enforce it. General Manager Stone suggested the possibility of adding into the ordinance something about the assistance programs. I would suggest that that's probably not a great idea, because then we're going to have to alter the ordinance when we want to sunset those assistance programs. So the assistance programs, we're taking no action on tonight. They exist, I'm told. That's my understanding. And they are available to the ratepayers. And if they use those now, they will gain an advantage in that they will not have to fund $300,000 or a million or whatever. And that the agency will assist in that process. So if they're smart, they will take advantage of those programs. And if they're true to what they say in here, that they are very supportive of our efforts at conservation of the potable water, they will cooperate and want and be better served by not using potable water on landscape. So my preference is to not hold this up. My preference is not to add language into the ordinance that would codify our obligation to provide assistance. We have it. I'm sure that the folks that wrote this are, Mr. Nakamura is probably still listening, I would hope. He now knows that these programs are available. He can call staff and ask. and work with staff in order to take advantage of those programs. We're not going to kill them tonight, nor probably anytime soon. So this simply gives staff a tool that they can require folks now and in the future to take the less expensive water and keep our potable water for the higher use of in-home use. So I think that we should act tonight. I think that this ordinance is just fine. And I would hope that their residents that this community would realize that we are acting responsibly and properly and doing the best we can to provide them the best quality water for everyone in this valley, and trying to make the price of that water and the availability and the reliability of that water the best it can be for everyone in this valley. So I'd like to move forward tonight. Thank you.
Vice President Jutze.
Thank you. And I appreciate all the discussion and ideas and information that came from legal counsel as well. I have a couple of thoughts. Honestly, I am coming down on waiting on this for a few reasons. I do think that ordinance could stand to be clarified a little bit, if only in generality about, you know, available programs or, you know, whereas the city water has programs to encourage recycled water use or something. It may be general, it may be specific. I don't know. I'm sure we could figure that out fairly quickly. I am troubled, and this is not a new thing, when I hear people in the community are upset about something. And so we normally don't get into the weeds. You know, I've heard this repeatedly, and I would like to know more specifics about what it is. We're hearing costs, we're hearing time delays. I heard a little grumbling about the health concerns. You know, what if we're getting closer, what is the close list? And can a, you know, has our public outreach people been involved? Do we need to get a mediator involved? I hate to see a large swath of the valley represented by HOAs with boards be upset when they don't need to be upset. So if we can figure out what's going on there, make sure everything's on the table. You know, we heard the costs are either accurate or they could have it for free. You did skip over the slide with the non-functional turf. I mean, if I was on an HOA and I thought I'm going to lose all my green belts in 2029, because my understanding is that includes landscaping too, right? No, it's so you could have bushes, but no turf.
You can have trees.
Okay. Well, either way, in the severe drought that we had, if they were cut back and not were watering, you're going to lose all your landscaping anyways. So, you know, everybody in California has to balance, you know, costs and risks. And I just want to make sure that there's a complete communication of what the actual cost is going to be, what the benefits are, understand their concerns. I don't like, you know, one third of the valley being upset with us. But, you know, on the flip side, every single time we do an urban water management plan, the environmental groups are like, why are you doing more recycled water? We need more recycled water. You're not moving fast enough on recycled water. Every right here, I know your staff has been here, that comes up every single time. And we've had it, and now we have the opportunity to have connections. We have the opportunity to have grant funding that doesn't require our ratepayers to pay for this. It's a ongoing source of water. So we do need to move it forward. A little bit of soapbox here. The state passes mandates on these things and no one says anything. It's like, oh my gosh, we're in a drought. We have to do something. Okay. No outdoor watering, mandatory conservation, whether or not your valley has enough water. Everybody just sits there and goes, okay, thank you. And then this happens because the state does these things. So these are mandates coming down on us that everybody thinks is great until it hits them. So look at your state legislature for these mandates if you don't like them. I do know that this agency has supported bringing more water to the valley for a long time. And we continue to support bringing more water to the valley, more potable water. Another thing that is very difficult to get the state to move on, I'm talking about reservoirs that would help us contain some more of this rainwater that we've had. I'm talking about the dual tunnel, or now it's a single tunnel. When I got on the water board, they had been already working on it for 30 years. Now I've been on the water board for 20 years. There's ways to bring us more potable water, but the state isn't moving on it. So we have to have a solution. I think our valley is beautiful. I think our rebuilds are beautiful. Our parks are wonderful. We are so lucky to have all of these things. I know I want them to be green. So I hope we find a solution, but I just I think we could have a little more discussion on this. I do think the grant funding is great, but if we're close, let's see if we can get a little closer, in my opinion.
Dr. Bronstein.
So if we're talking about amending this, the resolution, there actually is a point where we take away the water from people, where it says that we can do a termination of service. And yeah, I mean, the agency is authorized to discontinue service upon written notice if a customer fails to comply with any. I don't like that. I'll just put it out there. I don't like that. If water is life and we have all those mandates, I don't think that because of not using recycled water that we can turn off service for people, unless we can explain that a little bit better and put in specific language. That's just way too vague for me.
Can I respond quickly?
Go ahead.
So the ordinance does not suggest that we will turn off water for people. Okay? These are green things, irrigation. So there's no people that are alive will have their lives threatened in any way by turning off the irrigation meter.
So it should say irrigation, turn off an irrigation meter. Like the words, it should be spelled out better in it.
Yes. It says,
I don't know. I just, I just think that should be done. Also, I was wondering what was happening with the schools, because we've just been talking about the one part of 2D. Apparently, according to the committee meeting, there were three schools that also were not happy. How's that coming along?
We get deferred it now. I can try to summarize, but you're right here.
Thank you. Mr. Stone and the director of the scene. I don't think not happy is the word I would use. I think that there's just been we got fairly in depth in our negotiations with the school districts, and then there was a change of staff. And then radio silence after that. So there's just been continued attempts to make communication, but that hasn't landed correctly. And so maybe their priorities are different right now, but I wouldn't say that there's anything unhappy about it. It's just about when you look at the specific sites, we have to look at to what degree do we want to spend those funds in the Purple Prep program to get certain amounts of water. Do we want to spend more to get less? Based off of those requirements. So the negotiation really gets into understanding the nuance, the minutiae, and the needs of the customer specifically. And then with that, there's just times where communication is their top priority, and there's times when it's not. And right now, it hasn't been their top priority. So I don't know if there's anything unhappy, qualitatively speaking. So thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
No, I haven't
even
heard
it. Probably.
You
want to speak or not? President
Mr. Dickens, so we've heard about Westridge. I have to make one comment, though, on Mr. Nakamura's letter, which also Mr. Nakamura mentioned during his verbal comment. It's on his letter, paragraph 3, last couple of sentences, quote, Westridge could have already been through the first phase of conversion to include a community park and community pool in a large slope and turf area. I'm not sure that the purple prep agreement that was sent to them on February 16 was entirely understood by Westridge, just because of the mention of the community pool. But anyway, one more comment on the ordinance, section 2.4, appeal and waivers and hearing. I want to go and read from that. Customer who wishes to appeal or request a waiver of a decision by the agency to require conversion to recycled water must submit a written appeal on a form provided by the agency, which will be provided, and must be submitted no later than 30 days for the date of the notice of determination. So there is an appeal process. And gentleman Matt Stone did mention that any necessary discourse, but such appeals will be brought to the board for review. Mr. Dickens, we heard about Westridge. Could you talk about some of the customers and ratepayers that are really happy with Purple Prep and share any feedback from those customers?
Sure. Thank you, Director Bohatsky. And just to clarify on behalf of the first point, the pool has its own meter filling the pool, and I believe there's dedicated irrigation around the pool facility. So they call it park and pool. That's their nomenclature. Yeah, certainly they will want to fill the pool. We have had some great, all of our partners have had willingness to have conversations, collaborate, provide feedback. There's context for each customer that we have to dive into. This is not a one-size-fits-all type of program. Every customer has their own issues, whether it be with using recycled water or getting the right approvals from internal decision makers. There's just a lot of context and a lot of things to work through. But we have had the city of Santa Clarita, for example, has signed up for conversion in the phase 2B section. So that includes LMD sites and a community park in the Fairfax Ranch. We have had some customers, on the other hand, who've expressed incredible desire and enthusiasm to participate in the program, only to find out that their facilities are not up to code and would cost $600,000 or more for getting a small portion of acre feet because they'd have to get up to code in order to make those improvements. So as you can see, again, this gets back to kind of dealing with each customer, understanding what's feasible, what's cost reasonable, both on their side, but also on the agency side in terms of funding those programs to make reasonable cost conversion plans. So I think from that perspective, all of our customers have been receptive, willing to talk, willing to engage, willing to negotiate, but working through those specifics, working through that context, that minutia, really site-specific and varies from customer to customer. But I honestly think it's been overall a very positive experience. It's challenging. There's a lot to work through in order to do this.
Go ahead, Dorfman.
Regarding the appeals and waivers, I'm not understood the ordinance. If there's appeal, that appeal just goes back to the general manager for his deputy. I don't see where it was coming to the board as you would have.
As draft, we would go back to the general manager.
Okay, well, Okay, well, I thought that that's what you were suggesting, Matt.
Yeah, what?
I thought that Matt, you said that appeal would be brought to the board, and that was in the ordinance.
I think I had it wrong. That was my impression. So I was in there.
I don't. Okay. I think that would be worthwhile for a staff to consider modifying that.
Dr. Armitage.
So thank you for mentioning that, because I thought, did I miss something? Because I had the same issue, and I know a couple of people have said it, and I think some of the things that legal counsel mentioned also were a little confusing to me, because I didn't see some of that in the ordinance as well. So I would also recommend making that clear in the ordinance if that's the direction you do want to go and bring things back to the board for consideration or not. I don't know. I can see pros and cons of both. But I do want to say that I would hate to kind of kick the can down the road using that decision-making authority. I think we would be best to address this whole issue, what we've been talking about for the last hour and 11 minutes, in the immediate future and not leaving it for later. So, super buff. Thank you.
Vice President Ozahusky.
Regarding Ward Code 13550, I was mentioning ordinance here. Just to summarize, third point, not detrimental to public health. Mr. Dickens, can you elaborate on that? The burden of quality oath on the water agency, is that correct? And if that's correct, can you kind of expand on that? What do we do to ensure quality? How do we check to ensure quality? And what are our mitigation protocols if we find something that's that might be suspect?
If I may, I'll hop on that one. I'll go over the house. And so if we had another 2 hours, we can talk through the permitting process that overlays recycled water use. It is in one of the most challenging permitting process that it has been the most challenging permitting process that I've ever experienced in my career. It involves many different steps, but we'll just focus on the quality aspect of the one that you're asking for. So there are two sides to the equation. There are the entities that produce the recycled water. So in this case, in our valley, we're talking about Pelham County Sanitation District through either, in this case, the Valencia Water Reclamation. They hold a permit that has to treat the water to the appropriate standard to be used. And so they are held responsible for that. When we purchase that water from them, we are held responsible for the quality of the water through the distribution system. So the initial water quality aspect of recycled water is held by the LA County Sanitation District. And that's the kind of our contract with them, and then through the permitting structure that overlays that relationship. Very similar to the Vista plant, but that one is the city of Santa Maria owns the actual permit for the quality of the water that is treated. We are responsible for taking it and distributing it back at that point. So it's a fairly complex regulatory permitting process that each agency has to go through. We've been going through that process for the last 2 years. And about a month ago, we received to be able to service the water that needs to be serviced. So hopefully that answers the question.
Yeah, absolutely. Just wanted to make it clear for the public and for the directors. So we do have the right not to accept the water if it doesn't meet a certain criteria, and we check the quality of water that we receive from the two sources that you mentioned. Is that right?
Yes, the permits require reporting of the clause.
Okay, thank you. Back to you, President Martin.
And Director Marks.
Mr. Cole, could you expand on that just a little bit more about the permitting process as it relates to responsibilities of the property owner as far as a supervisor?
Certainly, Director Marks, and this is the next layer of permitting that I was mentioning. You have state board permitting that handles the water, kind of the actual quantity of water. You have the regional water quality control board that handles the treatment of the water. And then you have what are called end user agreements, which is the division of drinking water, which handles the end use of the water. And all those rules on the end user side are put in place to ensure that you handle the recycled water properly, that it's not cross-connected to the potable supply. So there's a whole set of rules and regulations. This board has adopted those rules and regulations. There's a contractual arrangement between our agency and that end user that defines those responsibilities. And there are things like you have to periodically go through and shut off the water to test, positive shut-off tests is what they call it, turn off the water to make sure that potable doesn't come out or recycling doesn't come out in the wrong places. And so that's a permitting requirement that has to be partially our responsibility and partially the end user's responsibility. As part of that end user responsibility, they have to have a trained member that's called an on-site supervisor that is trained in the handling of recycled water use. And I think, you know, a lot of time that's where the rubber really hits the road on these things when you're looking for a customer to convert, is there are responsibilities that they must take on. And so it's trying to find that right way of fairly doing that. A lot of the time, that's why our recycled water rate is priced in a way that is less than full, because there's additional responsibilities that the customer themselves take on in these arrangements.
Thank you.
Yeah, I trust that we've all had a chance to express our opinions and ask questions. We do have one more public comment. Mr. Nakamura would like to make an additional public comment. I am going to allow it. I would have allowed him to go long the first time, given the nature and gravity of the issue before us. So, Mr. Nakamura, if you're ready to make your additional public comment, we're listening. But I would just ask, please do not make it in the form of a question and answer.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. I would make question comments to the board. my comments would be this. The discussion coming from your team lacks an extreme amount of context. The obstacles that have been involved are actually quite simple, and a lot of difficulties and challenges with communications in coming to a reasonable solution. One specifically being, we've asked for a robust system in the community park. Initially, the first go around when Mr. Dickens approached us, when the assumption was the HOA was going to fund this, is that the complete system had to be retrofitted with all exposed pipes being purple, the normal, typical robust systems, all exposed lines, lateral lines, valve boxes. When our initial conversation veered into the direction that where we still stand now, which there is no HOA funding for this, that's when the funding program started to come to light. And then the scope of that installation in the community park reduced dramatically to just valve boxes and some posted signage. We did not feel that that was a best practice or appropriate given the application of the recycled water install. We're not very far off of this. A lot of this comes from talk about saber rattling and I'll be honest, I take umbrage with some of the communications coming from your board members. We've been very reasonable in our communications, trying to come to an agreement on this. And a lot of it is just reasonable. We've asked for very reasonable. If the board could get presented with our last offer, our last written offer from February 16th, that's all our offer has been from day one. And SCB Water's team has been unreasonable in their negotiations and willingness to provide a robust and safe system for an area that often has small children, pets, and other usages in that area. They want us to wipe water off immediately from all exposed surfaces every day. Yet they don't want to put all the sprinkler heads, lateral lines, and all the appurtenances in that area to be marked purple. That's what we've asked for. We've asked for a 2-year warranty just to make sure that we're not going to have any negative impacts. I'd also ask that the board familiarize itself with the non-functional turf ordinance. There's no turf in Westridge that currently is affected by that, because the ordinance specifically states that it's turf that is non-accessible by the community. It also has carve-outs for trees, where trees exist within the turf areas. We're not going to lose access to that given the current status of that functional turf agreement. But again, we're reasonable and we want to move forward with this. There were deficits in the plan. We engaged with a third-party water consultant familiar with conversions, and he identified specific problems. And when we have addressed those problems, unfortunately, the communication has been lacking and unable to satisfy our concerns with safety, selling this to the community, and then funding. Again, I appreciate the directors, just to close, the directors who have stated, if you add verbiage into this ordinance that covers funding moving forward, that satisfies our concern, because right now there is nothing. There is nothing that states that. And as Mr. Dickens craftily got around in regards to the cost for, we've also asked for the potential for conversion for the rest of the community in the future. I have never received an answer from your team regarding the potential scope of conversions throughout our community in the future. This is not just about the funding. We are aware of the funding. We are very aware of what that program offers. But again, we have a very large community here with lots of connections, and Mr. Dickens and his team have on multiple occasions either said they don't have the answers or would come to us with the answers about the potential overall future conversions throughout the community. And those absolutely, absolutely, given the size and scope of what we have here, could breach into the seven figures.
Mr. McNamara, I think we've got your second public comment. I think we what you're discussing now are items that hopefully will be discussed with our staff as we move forward with this. So thank you very much for all your additional public comments. And with that, I would like to close the public hearing and conclude item 5.1. Item 5.2, which is our next item, which would be considering the adopting the ordinance to provide for the mandatory use of recycled water within the agency service area. Rather than having a presentation, I've decided to drop this item from the board tonight and take it up at a future meeting. So we will not be considering item 5.2 to give our staff and the public a chance to work through the issues that still aren't resolved. But be assured, we will be adopting an ordinance in the future.
Point of order.
All right, we can move to item.
Point of order. Point of order.
Pardon me?
Point of order.
Go ahead.
I'm not sure. Effectively, what the chair has just done is table this, and without a vote. I'm not sure that
I needed a vote.
Yeah, well, a motion to table requires a vote, and effectively, that's what's happened here, or what's been proposed. So, I don't think that's appropriate. I think maybe legal counsel will opine whether or not the prerogative of the chair.
It's fairly common practice for a chair to pull something without objection. If there's an objection, and it sounds like you have one, then following procedures where, you know, if you wanted to make a motion or if someone wanted to make a motion to postpone the matter, then we should do that. So if there's someone who would like to hear it today, I think your colleague technically is correct that there's a procedure that allows other members, although oftentimes deference is given to the chair. But if there's objection, then we should have
a motion. I would entertain a motion to postpone this item to a future meeting.
I move that we postpone this item until...
Motion by Vice President Kutsai. Second by Director Brownstein. Is there any discussion? Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Marks.
Yes.
Director Peterson.
Yes.
Director Brownstein.
Yes.
Director Coffey.
No.
Director Armitage.
Yes.
Vice President Osowski.
Yes.
Vice President Goodside.
Yes.
President Martin.
Yes.
Thank you. This item is postponed to a future meeting.
Thank you very much, Board. Thank you, staff. Thank you, members of the public. We can move to item 6 with consent calendar. There are 6 items on the consent calendar tonight. Is there any public comment before we consider approving the consent calendar?
There is not.
Very good. I would entertain a motion for approval of the consent calendar. Director Brownstein.
I'm making the motion to...
You're making the motion.
I'm making a motion.
All right. Motion by Director Brownstein. Do we have a second? Second by Director Armitage. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Thanks. I'd like to be able to say how you vote. Director Armitage.
Yes.
Director Colling.
Yes.
Director Peterson.
Yes.
Director Brownstein.
Yes.
Director Marks.
Yes.
Vice President Goodside.
Yes.
Vice President Osowski.
Yes.
President Martin.
Yes.
Thank you. The consent calendar is approved to that committee, and that includes resolution numbers.
Thank you, Board.
416, SCD-417, and SCD-418.
Thank you. Move to action items for approval. Item 7.1, approve 1, adopting a resolution awarding a construction contract to J.R. Construction Company, Incorporated, and finding the project exempt from CEQA pursuant to CEQA guidelines sections 153012A and rather 2, purchase order to Hazen and Sawyer Incorporated for engineering services during construction, and 3, a purchase order to NWH Contract Constructors Incorporated for the construction management, inspection services, and material testing for the T7U4 and U6 wells, PFAS treatment, service on 2 wells, VOC treatment, and a new disinfection facility. And presenter tonight is our senior engineer, Orlando Marino.
Thank you, President Martin. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
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 Perfect. Okay, thank you. Good evening, directors. My name is Orlando Moreno, principal engineer with the agency. So let me go ahead and start on this presentation. If we can go to the next slide, please. Okay, so we're going to start with an exhibit showing the locations of the subject wells and the facilities that are related to the project that we'll be discussing tonight. The existing T7, U6, and U4 wells are represented here as blue dots along the Santa Clara River. The Saugus 1 and 2 wells are represented here as red dots at the intersection of Magic Mountain and Bouquet Canyon Road. The T and U wells were taken offline and are not producing groundwater at this time due to PFOA detection. The PFOA levels at these wells have exceeded DDW's response level and concentrations. We intend to transmit the groundwater from these wells to the new PFAS treatment system to be located at the Rio Vista intake pump station facility designated here as RVIPS by utilizing a 16-inch pipeline that runs along Newhall Ranch Road, comes down Bouquet Canyon Road, and ultimately ends at RVIPS. And that this blue line here on this exhibit represents that transmission line that we'd be using to convey groundwater from those T&U wells. The Saugus 1 and 2 wells are currently active and producing groundwater. VOC contaminants, primarily TCE and PCE, have been detected at Saugus 1 and 2. VOC levels have been well below the state MCLs, but slightly above the state's detection reporting limits. Perchlorate is also detected at these wells. The perchlorate contamination is currently being removed at the existing Saugus perchlorate treatment facility that is located at RBIPS. So the red line that you see here represents the transmission line that takes groundwater from the Saugus wells up to the RBIPS facility. Next slide, please. Okay, this image shows the various offsite locations that will require work as part of the project. Some of the work includes well case rehabilitation, pump motor replacements, and electrical upgrades at our existing T7 and U6 well sites. The project will also include various localized pipe tie-in and pipeline abandonment work along Newhall Ranch Road and Bouquet Canyon Road that are relatively minor, but required for us to be able to transmit water from the T&U wells to the RBIPS facility. Next slide. This next slide provides a plan view of our Rio Vista intake pump station site and its existing condition. The main pump station building is located here in the center. The site contains the Q2 well at the east end of the property. And then you can see on the western side, the Q2 perchlorate removal system, and then the Saugus 1 and 2 perchlorate treatment vessels that are located just north of the Q2 treatment vessels. We also have two shed structures located on the northwest corner of the property, shown here in green. These structures house our sodium hypochlorite and ammonium hydroxide tanks, feed pumps, and components that make up our on-site disinfection system. That system currently disinfects groundwater produced from Saugus 1 and 2 and our Q2 wells. The disinfection equipment is somewhat outdated and inefficient, so we propose to replace it with a more state-of-the-art and consolidated system that will reduce long-term operational costs and improve efficiency. Next slide. Here we see a site plan showing the proposed improvements at RBIPS. The agency, through board approval, retained Hazen and Sawyer as the engineer of record to prepare the plans and specifications for the project. In this exhibit, we see the proposed PFAS treatment system for the T&U wells in blue, here on the right side of the exhibit. The Saugus 1 and 2 VOC treatment is shown here in green, just west of the pump station building, and the disinfection building in yellow. The new disinfection building will contain an on-site sodium hypochlorite generation system and a liquid ammonium sulfate storage and feed system that will treat or disinfect waters from T7, U6, U4, Q2, Saugus 1, and Saugus 2. So this is a larger disinfection system that we're proposing on this project. Next slide, please. On CEQA, since the work is considered a minor alteration to the existing facilities and no additional extraction of water is proposed, the project is categorically exempt under CEQA Guideline Section 15301 Class 1. As previously mentioned, most of the work will be contained within the RBIPS property. Well upgrade work will occur within our existing well sites, and any minor pipeline work or abandonment would occur within the street public right-of-way. Additionally, biological and cultural resource assessment reports were prepared for the project to comply with our grant funding requirements set by the State Water Resource Control Board. The reports confirmed that the project would have no adverse impacts to biological, jurisdictional, and cultural resources on or near any of our work sites. I also want to mention that this project helps meet our new 2024 strategic plan objective B.2.1, which aims to update and carry out capital projects related to water system reliability and sustainability. Next slide. Excuse me. So staff advertised the project for public contractor bidding on Planet Bids. Six bids were received from companies listed on this slide. J.R. Philant's Construction Company, Inc. submitted the lowest bid at just over $17.8 million for the project. Staff has reviewed J.R. Philant's bid forms and documents and has confirmed that all documents were completed and submitted as required in our bid and contract requirements. Staff has also followed up with the latest with the listed references to verify that similar work was completed as listed in their bid documents. So at this time, staff is recommending that J.R. Philant be awarded the construction contract as the lowest responsive and responsible bidder. The construction cost came in just over $2 million above our engineer's cost estimate of $15.7 million. We're still seeing a widespread increase in construction costs. For this project specifically, we noticed a significant cost appreciation on items such as electrical and instrumentation components and pre-filter assembly components compared to what we've seen previously on other projects. We're also likely seeing higher costs for construction materials and equipment that must comply with Build America, Buy America, and American and Iron Steel requirements as needed for our grant funding obligations. Next slide. In addition to construction contract costs, the project will also require construction support services. The first is the construction management inspection and material testing for the project. Staff issued a request for proposal to seven on-call engineering firms for these services. Staff, through its internal selection committee, reviewed three proposal submissions and ultimately selected MWH Constructors, Inc. to provide these CM services. MWH's fee to provide construction management inspection and material testing through an estimated 18-month construction duration is $984,454. Staff is also recommending that Hazen and Sawyer, our project engineer of record, be authorized to provide engineering support services during construction of the project for an amount not to exceed $748,440. Hazen scope of work includes responding to RFIs, reviewing material submittals, and advising the agency throughout the course of construction. So the total amount requested at this time is $19,555,241 to cover the construction contract by J.R. Philant and to provide construction support services by our consultants. So to fund this project, we have recently updated our fiscal year 23-24, 24-25, 25-26 budgets to ensure that we have adequate resources to fund the projects through through completion. Next slide, please. We will be receiving various grants to help us cover costs related to the TNUL's PFAS treatment and disinfection facility components of the project. The first is a $1.5 million Prop 1 IRWIN Round 2 grant that's being issued by the State Department of Water Resources. The second is a multi-grant package from the State Water Resources Control Board. The first group of that batch is a $5 million emerging contaminants grant, along with a $1.1 million grant as part of the LARC Consolidation Incentive Fund. The state has also recently notified us that the project is eligible to receive an additional $5 million that can be used for this or any future PFAS treatment project. And to add the cherry on top, we are eligible to borrow up to $10 million for this project at zero interest loan. So these grants require a 50% contribution from the agency. So it's likely that only a portion of the additional $5 million would be used on TNU, and the rest can be used on future PFAS projects like the upcoming SWOLS PFAS treatment project that's coming shortly. In total, we're looking at receiving a approximately $12.6 million, or a little over $12.6 million in grants, plus the $10 million zero interest finance loan that I mentioned. I also want to note that the Saugus 1 and 2 VOC treatment is a subject of the agency's pending contamination claim against the Whitaker Corporation. Staff have and will be tracking all soft and hard costs related to VOC treatment separately as we await the final ruling on our cost recovery litigation. Next slide. On schedule, with your approval tonight, we anticipate starting construction in early June of this year and completing construction by December of 2025. Contractually, the contractor has 540 days, almost 18 months to complete the project. Now we'll note that we expect to complete construction of this project well in advance of any of our grant funding deadlines. Next slide. So to conclude, we request that the Board of Directors approve the attached resolution awarding a construction contract to J.R. Palance Construction Company, Inc. in the amount not to exceed $17,822,347 and finding the project is exempt from CEQA pursuant to CEQA Guidelines Section 15301, and authorize the General Manager to execute a purchase order with Hazen & Sawyer in the amount not to exceed $748,440 for engineering services during construction, and authorize the general manager to execute a purchase order with MWH Constructors, Inc. in the amount not to exceed $984,454 for the construction management inspection and material testing for the T7, U4, U6 wells PFAS treatment, Saugus 1 and 2 wells VOC treatment, and new disinfection facility. That concludes my presentation, and I will go ahead and pass it on to President Martin. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Marino, for your presentation. Madam Secretary, do we have any public comments? I have no comments.
We do not.
Very good. Thank you. Any questions or Director Brownstein?
First of all, thank you so much for your presentation. Amazing job to our grant team. That's like, wow. I just wanted to put that out there because that was really impressive. And then, I'm all in favor of this. I'm not trying to stir anything up, but I did have a question. It's more of a just, I'm curious question. It's not like anything. I was wondering, does it really take a year and a half to build something like this? Or is it more like a supply kind of management thing, or is it actually physical work? I'm just always curious about how long do these things actually physically take to build. Sorry.
Yeah, Director Brownstein. The reason we have 18 months for this particular project is because we have to meet the BABA and the AIS requirements as part of the grant funding. And that's, in essence, we have to go out and solicit vendors that produce materials, equipments that are made in America. And so that's a process that takes time for the contractor to go out and find those vendors specifically. So we put some additional time in there to give the contractor some fair amount of time to go out and find those vendors so that we can meet that obligation.
It's not actually building. Just curious. Mm-hmm.
Any other questions? Director Armstrong.
Thank you. So thank you for your presentation, Mr. Moreno. Just a general comment, I always wince when I see the cost of some of these projects. But at the same time, it's certainly understandable because these are removing contaminants from our water system and the water that we all drink. And I'm very thankful that we can budget for these types of projects. So although they're huge and hard to look at the figures, I think it's important to recognize that we have the ability to do something about it. Some communities don't have that ability, that we are in a position that we can't do that. And yes, thank you to all the people involved in helping us find grant funding, and also the people who help with the recovery of costs through litigation as well. So I think all of that piecing that together again, helps bring the cost down for ratepayers. So they're not bearing the burden of all of that. The only question that I have pop up in my mind was I was looking at the maps that you were showing us is, wow, is there really that much room for all that additional equipment at that location? Because it doesn't look like there's a whole lot of room to work with. So I'm guessing there's a lot of creativity happening and squeezing all of that in. So thank you to the team for doing that. And that's it. Thank you.
Vice President, you want an answer to that question, by the way? Do we have enough room?
It's all right. Okay. I know we have room.
I think the answer is Vice President, no.
Yeah, it's a cool support of this project. My question is regarding site security during the construction and post commissioning. So during construction, will there be security measures for 24/7 security, or can you kind of expand on that? And the
sure.
reason I ask is the high traffic area, which is good and bad in terms of theft prevention, but what are our that prevention countermeasures here during construction process?
Yeah, Director Soski, we do have an on-site camera video surveillance system at RVIPS now. And so before construction starts, we will be relocating that system and it will be maintained throughout construction. So that's, we're actually coordinating that work now. So that will happen just so we can keep eyes on that site. And then also in our contractor specifications, we do have provisions requirements for the contractor to secure the site.
Thank you. I motion to approve all 3 points.
Motion to approve. Yeah. All right. I second the motion. Made a motion to approve the recommended action. Director Marks. Second by Director Marks. Unless there's any further discussion, Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Ms. Iacono, you can say hi. Director Colley.
Yes.
Director Peterson.
Yes.
Director Bronstein.
Yes.
Director Armitage.
Yes.
Director Marks.
Yes.
Vice President Osobowski.
Yes.
Vice President Goodside.
Yes.
President Martin.
Yes.
This item was passed, and that is resolution number SCV-419.
Very good. Thank you, Board. Thank you, staff. We'll move forward to item 7.2, approve adopting a resolution authorizing the general manager to execute a purchase order amendment for engineering and inspection services for the Saugus number 3 and number 4 wells construction, parentheses replacement wells project, and finding the resolution exempt from review under California Environmental Quality Act. And our presenter tonight is Mr. Robert Manuelis. Hope I pronounced the second name or the last name right. Robert.
Thank you, President Martin. I'm here to kindly ask for additional funding for the Saugus 3 and 4 wells construction replacement wells project. Next slide, please. Here we have a map of the project location. It's 2 well sites, Saugus number 3 and Saugus number 4. They're shown in blue dots. They're immediately west of Six Flags Magic Mountain. Next slide, please. The project consists of drilling and constructing 2 wells with a capacity of 2,000 gallons per minute to drill depths ranging between 2,000 and 3,000 feet below ground surface. Next slide, please. We did award the construction contract on April 5th, 2022. The construction contract was awarded to Zim Industries from Fresno, California for approximately $12.7 million. Saugus well number 3 has been completed. We're currently working on Saugus well number 4. And we're currently reaming the borehole. And our estimated construction completion date is September of 2024. Next slide, please. We currently have Richard C. Slade on board for engineering and inspection services. Their original PO amount was for 343 $1,000. A purchase order amendment to increase the original budget by $34,300 under the GM's 10% authority was issued. And we are requesting an additional $65,000. That would make the total purchase order amendment to the amount of $442,300. Next slide, please. Here are the additional tasks performed by RCS. They did review, provide assessment, and email correspondence on potential long-term pumping and rehab and redevelopment of Saugus 3 and 4 for anticipated period of inactivity prior to permanent pump equipping. They did perform field services and data review tabulation for a second packer test conducted in Saugus 3. Additional field services and data review tabulation for isolated zone testing in Saugus 4. Preparation and presentation of additional testing data results and GDE monitoring well data. And along with that came conclusions and recommendations by RCS for a Saugus 4 scenario with the possibility of adding Saugus 5 in between wells 3 and 4. And also, when we first started the project, we were holding biweekly construction meetings. As the PM, I thought it would be best to have weekly meetings to ensure this project was headed in the right direction. Next slide, please. And the project recommendation is that the board of directors approve adopting a resolution authorizing the general manager to execute a purchase order amendment for engineering and inspection services to Richard T. Slade for an amount not to exceed $442,300 for the Saugus number 3 and 4 wells construction replacement wells project. That concludes my presentation.
Thank you, Robert. Madam Secretary, do we have any public comment?
We do not.
Very good. You can open it for questions and discussion. Director Armitage.
Thank you, Mr. Van Willis, for your presentation. So just a couple questions. Can you just go through engineering and operations? Because I couldn't find this agenda item as I was trying to search.
No, we came straight to the board.
Okay.
Just because we are running out of funding.
Okay, thank you. I don't understand what the issue for the longer schedule is. Could you just explain that? Maybe I missed it. It wasn't very.
Yes. So previously we came to the board for Blacking Beach for approximately 500K. And in that presentation, we kind of talked about the delays that happened on this project. And the board did award that additional funding to Blacking Beach. Now we're coming back for Richard C. Slate, and we're only requesting $65,000. They were also impacted by those delays. And that's why we're back here to ask for additional more money.
The Blacking Beach for what services? I'm sorry, I know it's all piecemeal, and I always try to figure out who's doing what on these engineering projects.
So we have Blacking Beach, who is the construction manager. And we have Richard C. Slade, who is our hydrogeologist on the project. And Richard C. Slade is performing inspection and engineering services, which is their specialty as a hydrogeologist on this project. And Blacking Beach is performing construction management support, general construction management support on this project.
And so are we also expecting additional purchase order amendments for construction to come also coming our way?
Right now, currently for Zim Industries, we don't anticipate coming back to the board for additional funding. We have not tapped into the GM authority for Zen Industries yet. And the way things are progressing, we currently have Saga Swell number 4 at approximately 1,400 feet below ground surface. So we're pretty close to getting to the bottom of that well. And the only thing that we've come across is that we've hit hard soil. And so that's kind of delayed the project a little bit more. But to answer your question, I don't think we're going to come back to increase Zim Industries' original contract.
Okay. And then last question, it's noted under financial considerations that the first $8.3 million of this project is funded by Whitaker Corporation. So it made me wonder what the total cost of the project is. Is it going up from, I was trying to do the math, is it going up from 12.8 to 13.2? Does that sound right?
That sounds about right.
Okay, that's it. Thank you.
Vice President Gutzeit.
I just wanted to clarify for the record before the vote on this. It threw me because of the wording. The change that we're authorizing is $65,000. The wording says execute a purchase order amendment not to exceed $442,300. It's an amended purchase order not to exceed $442,300. I just want to say that for the record that the amendment is not $443,000. Mm-hmm. The full package.
The new price.
Is that? Yes, the new price is that. And it said it through there a couple times, which was throwing me. Maybe that's how it's normally worded, but I just want to confirm for the record.
Good. All right. Thank you, Robert, for your presentation. It wasn't entirely clear. This didn't come to engineering, so but we do have members of the engineering committee here. I don't, looking through your laundry list in your staff report, these are all additional scope items. I guess it starts on page 234 of the staff of the packet and continues on. So this is all additional scope.
It was a scope that was not originally anticipated in their original budget. And we essentially thought that we could make it fit into their original budget. And it turns out that we could not. And so we essentially waited to come back to the board until we actually needed the additional money. And so now we're here asking for a bit more money just to make sure that we can wrap up the project with our consultant.
Right. Thank you, Robert. With that, I'd entertain a motion to approve the action recommended. Motion by Director Brownstein. Do you have a second? Dr. Marks, second. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Vote. Director Bronstein.
Yes.
Director Peterson.
Yes.
Director Colley.
Yes.
Director Armitage.
Yes.
Director Marks.
Yes.
Vice President Gutzeit.
Yes.
Vice President Ozahosky.
Yes.
President Martin.
Yes.
Thank you. This item does pass, and that's resolution number SCV-420.
Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you, Robert. We can move to item 8, General Manager's Report on Activities, Projects, Programs. Mr. Stone.
Okay. For a couple of slow GM reports, all of a sudden everything happened at once. First off, on April 8th, EPA did finally release their PFAS drinking water regulations that have been anticipated since last year when they held the public hearings on those. And they submitted them to the Federal Register for publication on April 10th. Water providers across the nation will have 3 years to complete monitoring, and I believe it's 5 years in the proposal to complete treatment to meet the standard. Staff is evaluating the additional impacts beyond wells already impacted by the state's response levels. Generally, it's looking like in the order of 3 or 4 wells, and of course, that could change if the wells set at that level. I mean, it doesn't take much. For PFOA and PFOS, the limit will be 4 parts per trillion. And for 3 other chemicals, PFNA, PFHXS, and GenX, or as I've just discovered in one publication, HFPO-DA, it's alternative base. And I won't read the chemical names, it's very, those limits will be set at 10 parts per trillion. In addition to that, there will be a hazard index used to regulate mixtures of those chemicals. We'll have, you know, at some point we'll have another PFAS update, and Captain PFAS himself can give you much more depth. I just want to make sure you got that information. Our PFAS team is, as you saw, is continuing to move projects along, including the TNU wells, which is part of the project that was awarded tonight. The Santa Clara and Hanby Wells project is moving closer to completion. I just want to say I'm grateful to our team of professionals here and their dedication to continue to work to get good projects delivered and commissioned to restore our supply. Probably my favorite meeting that I get to sit in on every other week is the PFAS strike team. It's remarkable to watch how they move through the agenda with updates and address issues in real time. As you saw in our press release yesterday, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals issued its decision on the appeal and cross appeals in the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency versus Whitaker case. And as we hoped, they did uphold the jury award for the dollar amount of, I believe it's $65.8 million, give or take. That number is also accruing interest. And found in favor of some of our cross claims, including cross appeals, including the issue of declaratory relief. And that issue will, by necessity, then be remanded back to the district court to address. This decision starts a 90-day clock for parties if they wish to seek U.S. Supreme Court review. I would say there's also a clock on the issuance of a demand to, mandate to bring that back to the district court by the Ninth Circuit when they release custody of the case, basically, kick it back at least. It's 7 days after a 14-day rehearing clock runs. So I know Ed wanted to know about clocks. So I tried to get a briefing on clocks. And I may have it partly right. Suffice it to say, once it goes back to the district court, it's not clear how long that will take. It'll have to get into their calendar and briefing process. And our prior experience was that it was a very busy court. So we will see. Since this is still ongoing litigation, I'm going to ask that you don't ask me to elaborate further in open session about this. But that's public. That's in their published decision. And I think in our press release we issued yesterday, it's a significant win for SCV Water and another step forward in recovering millions in financial impact from the perchlorate and VOC contamination from the waters. So we're pleased with that, but there's still a little ways to go there. But definitely that's a big step forward. Seems like water quality is the theme of the day. On April 10th, SCV Water sent a letter to the LA Regional Water Quality Control Board requesting additional sampling at the Chiquita Canyon landfill. This is a result of our review of the regional board's recent enforcement action in order. I mentioned we engaged some technical help on that in the last update. And the primary request was to conduct sampling of the south and east sedimentation basins, as well as requests that once the ordered groundwater monitoring wells are completed, sampling for PFAS occur in those wells. Finally, we requested that sampling at the east basin, there are two different basins where water can run off, include sampling for VOCs and metals, similar to the regional board's requirement at the south basin. So we'll keep you posted on that. That letter is available if anybody would like to get a copy of it. We can do that. So it's interagency, it's a public record. Also on April 10th, we had our all staff meeting where we discussed recent changes in the work schedule, as well as the gave the staff an update on where we were on PFAS from the staff that are working on that. Ryan Bai did a really nice job on that briefing. And we recognized several staff for service milestones that totaled 105 years of cumulative work. In addition, welcoming a pretty significant number of new staff members as we backfill for promotions and things we're filling in from below, as well as along the lines of one of our discussions on tonight. Finally, I would like to congratulate Kevin Strauss, who was recently informed that he was named the Communicator of the Year by the California Association of Public Information Officials. In keeping with the tradition, we'd like you to deliver an impromptu 20-minute speech and interpretive dance. Yes. Okay, that's it for my update. Thank you very much. That's it for tonight.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Stone. Do we have any public comment, April?
We do not.
Good. I know we'd all like to add our congratulations to Kevin. We're fortunate to have you serving us and our community. All right. No public comment. Any other questions? Go ahead, Director Colley.
Just want to, I expect the next thing we'll get is a request for an NBONC review or a rehearing. So when we get that, could I get a copy of it, please, since I think it's likely.
Oh, yeah, Director, I'm
thank you. So related to the Chiquilla Canyon landfill, the Signal had written an article about how there was water with leachate being released into waterways. And I know, and I very much appreciate that the agency did some testing in the nearby wells recently and found that there were no, what I understand, nothing of concern showing up right now. My question is there a plan to continue testing on some type of regular basis in the near future, since that seems to be an ongoing issue?
Yeah, I think at a high level, yes. I don't know that specific are mapped out yet. We're working with our technical consultant, but the backstop to that is the required sampling for our potable wells in general, which is periodic. I think one of the things we're waiting on is to see what comes out of our request for sampling on site, because that'll give us a little better idea of what's coming off the site. And it is definitely a dynamic situation. So,
thank you.
Vice President Zahar. Regarding the April 8th EPA and PFAS quality standards, you mentioned that Mr. Allgore will give us a presentation on PFAS remediation efforts. Could he also include the current experiment that we're running on the different media breakthroughs? And if you could also add information on the manufacturer, the vendor, the supplier itself, the health of the supplier and
the vendor's ability to provide that media to us.
Okay. Would the caveat for anything that was not disclosable under the arrangements for that testing? But, and I don't have chapter the person.
Oh, understood.
Yeah. Maybe some proprietary information, boundaries on that, but to the extent we can, we can talk about the incentives. I think the other thing to keep in mind is that process is also in place to help develop the competence of DDW and regulatory community so that if you want to pivot to a different resin material, they have a pilot study that's been conducted and then we'll start to do a pilot study. And they had input into the study program. It's not necessarily just about picking a winner as it is developing a track record in the pilot format for potential wider use.
Well, no, absolutely. The more sources, the better. I did not know. I was not aware that we have that agreement with the manufacturers.
I guess
the intent is to present.
Yeah, this might be the second time that I have assumed something, and I should be careful about that. Like, I have to get into assume that the appeal went to the board. Do that. So I will say my hesitation is just I want to make sure we are not running afoul of anything in the agreement. But I do not know the specific terms. It's been too long.
Either way, I mean, I do believe that the information that's available that is under public record should be presented to the public. But if we are under an agreement, maybe we can hear a presentation during closed session. Okay, let's open it back to you.
Director Brownstein.
Sorry, quick question. How much does testing a well cost us? Let's say we're doing the full panel.
It varies on the constituent that you're testing for. So as you recall, when we were looking at buying our own equipment for PFAS,
right,
the retail costs of those tests were in the high hundreds to even as much as $1,000 a test. For some of your constituents, it's not a significant amount.
So like in-house, it's under $100 a test?
It's necessarily an obstruction to doing tests.
Okay, I was just curious because, I mean, I understand that we, you know, don't want to over-test all the time as well, but I think that during this period where everybody's nervous, it just, you know, I know that we have periodic ones, like twice a year or something like that. Like, we maybe need to do it a little bit more often just to let people sleep better at night.
What we've done so far is we've kind of looked at publicly available data from monitoring at the site, from sampling that's been required by the operator at the site. It's from samples that have been taken, they're published in JSTOR, clearinghouse from those. And our consultants kind of looked at the constituents to see if anything looks abnormal. And then we have our own drinking water wells that we tested, and we're not seeing like a transfer necessarily. There is, you know, we do have low levels of PFAS, but the challenge there is we have low levels of PFAS, a lot of us. So, you know, I think we're trying to get some more pieces of information between the on-site monitoring down to the sedimentation basins. And then once they're requiring some monitoring wells to be installed off-site now, or further out. And once those are operating, we want to make sure those are sampling for things that will be concerned with.
Is there like a third party that's sampling this? Because I think part of the problem, again, it's not our business and we're not doing or whatever, but I think that it's like when somebody's having a crisis and not managing it very well, it's hard to trust their numbers as well.
They're submitted to a certified lab. So generally that's the...
But are we sure they're not using our tap water?
They're not putting it over at the landfill and telling us it's all good. They send it up to an outside lab that's certified. And typically the process there is they have to send blanks. So that helps keep... In other words, so that you can, you know, determine
where. Yeah. So there's no bias.
Right. That's the theory.
Thank you.
Vice President Goodsay.
I can't. I want to just ask for the record, because I know this came up at POL as well. Do we have any concern that any of this water is up gradient of our drinking water wells? Because my last understanding was it is not up gradient of us. But now it's sounding a little scary.
So well, two things. One, we were initially hearing about releases at the south end, but we've now heard about potential releases at the east end, which is, I guess we call it sedimentation basin or detention basin that's up behind that postal facility that's kind of up in the business park.
Yeah. I know what that is.
And so our concern is, it's still a ways. It would take a while to move, but mm-hmm. it is potentially, we're concerned that it could be potentially for anyone to try to get more monitoring to understand what's present there.
Okay. So that's why that added focus on that. Okay. Thank you.
I think that concludes our questions tonight for you, Mr. Stone. Thank you for your report. We can move to item 9, committee meeting recap report, singular, for informational purposes only. There was only one report in your packet tonight, which was the engineering and operation, which you've heard much of what was discussed at engineering was covered tonight. So do we have any public comments on the committee meeting recap report?
We do not.
No, we do not.
Okay. I don't see any questions or follow-ups, so we can move on to item 10, President's Report. A few updates for tonight. Outside of the agency conferences and events, the AQUA 2024 Spring Conference is coming up May 7 to 9 in Sacramento. The SCB Chamber of Commerce 15th Annual State of the County will be June 6, 2024 at the Highland Agency. And the 2024 Economic Outlook held at the College of the Canyons Performing Arts Center will be on September 27th, 2024. Please check your emails for additional events as they come through. Upcoming board meetings, we will have a special board meeting on May 13th at 6 p.m. in this room. And we'll have our regular board meeting on May 21st, 2024 at 6 p.m. in this boardroom. Upcoming committee meetings, which will be held at the Summit Circle EWS Boardroom at 5:30, will be the April 18th Public Outreach and Legislation Committee, the May 2nd, 2024 Engineering and Operations Committee, the May 15th Rescheduled Water Resources and Watershed Committee meeting, May 16th, the Public Outreach and Legislation Committee, and on May 20th, the Finance and Administration Committee meeting. That concludes the report for tonight. Are there any public comments?
There is none.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the board? Seeing none, we will move to item 11, AB 1234 reports. Are there any AB 1234 reports tonight? There was one report received. April received it from me. It was emailed and posted to the SCB Water website. And that it's at each of our spots. Are there any additional AB 1234 reports? Director Marks.
I didn't go participated in the Aqua Crown Working Committee's subcommittee meeting. I don't have anything to add to. The nice summary that he did in the written report.
Thank you. More AB 1234 down there. Vice President Goodsay.
On April 8th, I had my director one-on-one with Matt Stone. It was a virtual meeting, and we discussed some of the staffing proposals that were in front of the Finance Committee in greater detail. Thank you.
Good. Any other AB 1234 down there? It looks like there are none. So that concludes our AB 1234 reports. Were there any public comments on the AB 1234 reports?
There is none.
Very good. Thank you. Item 12, director reports. Are there any director reports tonight? Director Arnold.
Thank you. So I wanted to share that I am on the Aqua Local Government Committee, and it is forming a new subcommittee called the City and County Planning Nexus Subcommittee, and so I volunteered to be on that subcommittee. And the purpose of this subcommittee is to focus on planning activities by cities and counties and their interplay with and impacts to Aqua member interests, including water supply and infrastructure, water efficiency, and housing and accessory dwelling units. We're going to be having our first meeting fairly soon to establish priorities and a general work plan. So I just wanted to mention it in case anybody has any ideas that they would like to share with me to bring to this subcommittee meeting. So please do so. I'm very open to my ideas, and I want to make sure it's something that serves us well. So please reach out if you have ideas. And then secondly, I just this last week saw a notice about an upcoming event, which I very briefly spoke with President Martin about. It's the LA County Water Plan Water Resiliency Summit, hosted or presented by Board of Supervisor Chair Lindsay Horvath. It's going to be on April 29th. I think it's online, maybe. Sorry. Well, I have details here. I'm just sharing it also in case anybody's interested. This is something I'm interested in, and I wanted to make sure everybody else knew about it too. So maybe I'll share it with Ms. Jacobs. She can send it out too. Okay. That's it. Thank you.
Any other AB, or rather director reports down there? Same director reports. That concludes our director reports for tonight. Were there any public comments on Director Armitage's report? There's none. Okay. That brings us to item 13, closed session. We will be going into closed session. The public may stay on the Zoom webinar. Any board members or staff that are connected to the Zoom and are in closed session, please disconnect from Zoom. We will be meeting in closed session to discuss item 13.1. Once again, members of the public and any staff may stay on the current line. And once closed session is over, the board will reconnect to Zoom webinar for closed session announcements and any remaining items on the agenda. We are now in closed session. Those that are in closed session, please stay. Those that are not, please exit the room, for at least for the moment.
I'll report out that the board did take action in closed session to reject the claim that's listed on the agenda, and they did so by unanimous vote. Reflected the minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Byrne. We can move to item 15, director requests for future agenda items. Are there any requests? Director Bornstein.
I think that after today's hearing, I'd like us to have a conversation about recycled water versus direct potable use. We can talk about those two, compare the two, see which direction we want to go in so we don't invest in the wrong way.
Okay, we'll put it on the list and we'll discuss it. Okay. Any other requests for future?
Similarly, as a result of the discussion, I'd like to also have a conversation about communication with HOAs and get a better understanding of HOA governance structure. I don't know. So whatever it is that we can better understand how to work with HOAs, I think it would be helpful, maybe, again, starting in POL as a starting point. For that discussion or wherever else, you know, would be deemed appropriate. So okay. I think that would be helpful.
Maybe this is something we'll bring to public outreach. All right. I think that concludes requests for future agenda items. Do we have any public comment on what was requested?
We do not.
No public comment. Well, that brings us to item 16, adjournment. Thank you all for your patience tonight and engagement in this somewhat difficult discussion, and we are adjourned.